This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. To some people, the Midwest is a strange land of freezing winters and aggressive niceness. To others, it's the beloved home of fish fries and euchre games. To our next guest, comedian Charlie Behrens, it's all that and more. He's here with us today to talk about his new book on all things Midwest. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite part of being a Midwesterner, of living in Wisconsin or one of our neighboring states? What makes the Midwest a special place to you? If you're a fan of Charlie Behrens and Manitowoc Minute, come up, call in and share your story. Call in at 800-642-1234. If you're from somewhere outside the Midwest, but you're here now, what strikes you as weird, good, weird and good? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Charlie Behrens is an Emmy Award-winning journalist, comedian, and creator of the Manitowoc Minute. His new book is called The Midwest Survival Guide, How We Talk, Love, Work, Drink, and Eat Everything with Ranch. Charlie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. And, you know, as a thank you, I've got some extra venison in my chest freezer in the garage, and you're welcome to come on over. I also, you know, was able to freezer up some tomatoes. We got them freezer bags this year, the vacuum seal ones. So you're in good hands. Just come on over and I'll get you linked up.
That sounds great. And Charlie, this is something you talk a lot about. One of the many things you love about the Midwest, the idea that you would offer me, who you basically just met, some of that venison you got in your freezer.
Yeah, well, you know, someone's got to take it, honestly, first and foremost. But I think that's the Midwest nice in us. You know, it's a be nice first, ask questions later kind of deal. And, you know, the reason we do that is because, you know, it's just the right thing. Well, I won't lie to you here. That wouldn't be right. It's what gets us out of purgatory earlier. So, you know, doing it for the right reasons.
Now, I want to talk to you about something specific. I should start saying goodbye to you now. Even though we got a while to talk yet.
Actually, you're late.
I'm late. Because I know you got places to be, Charlie. Long goodbye.
I don't have any places to be. You might, and you don't want this conversation to last until, you know, I'm offering you old-fashioned stuff. And I don't mean anything frisky with that. It's a drink for any listeners outside of the Wisconsin listening area, you know. Some people mistake that. It's not WPR content, you know.
Oh, it sure is.
Anyway, yeah, you got to start before you walk in the door. And step number one is you slap your knee and you say them, welp. You know, the magic words, welp, you got it. Go for it. Welp, I suppose, you know.
Now, Charlie, you've got this Midwest survival guide. And one of the things I love about it is, you know, there's the stereotype of, you know, everybody in the Midwest is in a small town or a farm, and that's there, and you love it. But, for example, in your list of movies to watch after Fargo, you've got Escanaba in the Moonlight. You've got Purple Rain. You like all the parts of the Midwest, the big cities, the small towns, all points in between.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize the diversity we have here culturally, you know, with the folks living here. And there's so much love. And honestly, when I first started writing this book, I wasn't thinking much about that either. But then you put a title on it called The Midwest Survival Guide. Well, that's a lot you got to represent there. And, you know, I'm just one guy, one fella, and I have a limited viewpoint. So I really tried to, you know, we reached out to a bunch of different people. We have a Midwest gallery in the middle, where it's a bunch of artists from around the Midwest. We got one rep from each state, and they put their artwork in there. And if a picture is worth 1,000 words, one of these pieces of art is worth at least, you know, 10,000 words. And there is 12 pieces of art in there. So that's, if you think about that, that's a whole other book within this book. So it's a 2-for-1 deal. And if there's one thing people in the Midwest love, it's a 2-for. So there you go.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Martha is with us in Menominee. Martha, hello.
Well, hey, I just want Charlie to know he is real bad tush, and he is nationwide. My daughter grew up here and went off to Bluegrass College in Johnson City, Tennessee, and is driving around to this day with an Ope and a Keep Her Moving sticker on her car. And of course, that's sparked a lot of conversations with bluegrass people and others. And I also want to say that I worked the Pierce County Fair over in Ellsworth, Wisconsin this summer. And as I'm standing in the Apple booth, I look out in the mass of the crowd and I see a Keeper Moving sweatshirt. So from my booth to a total stranger, I raise my arm and I said, "Hey, tell your folks I says hi," to which a total stranger turned back to me and said, "Just watch out for deer." So, Charlie, you've made our lives so happy, and now it's going down to the next generation. So,
I love it.
You made my life happy. Now, what I want to know is, did he actually tell his folks that you says hi? That's the real question there.
Well,
by the way, tell your daughter.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Just tell your daughter to watch out for deer down there, Martha.
Yes,
do us a favor.
Yes, sir, I will. She knows.
Yeah, they are rutting down there in Johnson City. So, I've heard anyway. You know, I've heard those Tennessee deer, get a little willy-nilly too.
You don't want to be around the campfire without a big old guitar to beat them up with,
Martha, thanks a lot for calling in.
Thank you, Martha. Keep her moving.
We're talking to Charlie Behrens, comedian, host of the Manitowoc Minute, with us today to share his new book. It's called The Midwest Survival Guide, How We Talk, Love, Work, Drink, and Eat Everything with Ranch. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite thing about the Midwest? When you leave the Midwest, if you do, is there something that stands out to other people about you as being a Midwesterner? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Charlie Behrens. His new book is The Midwest Survival Guide, How We Talk, Love, Work, Drink, and Eat Everything with Ranch. Also, he's the creator of Manitowoc Minute. Here is a listen.
Alive from Manitowoc and dressed in a super dapper duck jacket, it's the Manitowoc Minute. This week's episode sponsored by Desenex over Deer and Merrill, who'd like to remind Robert G. Kleinschmidt to pay his bad check. Robert, you better tie a string around your finger, guy. I bet I know which finger you'll do.
Got some of your origin story from the book, Charlie. You were going into broadcasting, and your Midwest accent was an obstacle for you, so you kind of steered into the skid, right?
Yeah, it's tough when you're broadcasting in Dallas to tell everyone to make sure you stay at home on a hot day and find yourself a bubbler if you're out and about. Because, a bubbler in Wisconsin, the device you use to drink water. You go down to Texas, it's a different thing. It's a device you use to smoke the devil's lettuce. So you got to be careful. You can change the voice coming out of your mouth, but you can never change the voice inside your head, for the better, might I add. But yeah, I got yelled at for, my accent coming out and saying weird words and everything, I guess, I guess screwed the pooch. It means I made a mistake here. Outside of Wisconsin, they're calling the police because you probably got to go to prison longer than Michael Vick. But, it's just those things that get you into trouble. And eventually it got me into trouble enough. I just decided to double down on everything, people were saying was wrong about my broadcasting. And that's where the Manitowoc Minute character came from.
Let's bring on another caller now. Julia is with us in Madison. Julia, hi. Are you there?
A few minutes ago, and I heard Charlie talk about, when you walk in the door, you better start your goodbye Zen. I grew up here in Madison, but my mother grew up with 8 siblings towards the Prairie du Chien area. And whenever we'd get together for holidays, those goodbyes turned into like forever. I mean, like the 5 kids in our family and dad would be in the car and all the other uncles and cousins would be in their cars and the aunts and my mom, they would just continue to say their goodbye. And I didn't know if this was normal, if everybody did this throughout the country, but I came to end up living in California for a while and had discussions with people and they're like, no, that doesn't happen out here. So I love that. And I also have to say one more thing. Living out in California, I would crave Friday night fish fries. And I'd say that to people and they'd look at me like, what are you talking about?
Julia, thanks a lot for that call. Yeah, Charlie.
Yeah, no, they don't know what they're missing out there without, and they don't have supper clubs out there either, you know, and so, you know, they gotta, if they want to really get to the, they can talk all they want about, you know, the California sun and the waves of Malibu, but if you're bragging too much about the waves of Malibu, you've never seen the waves of Sheboygan, and those are something special, if I'm going to be honest with you, and there's so much more here that people don't give us credit for, and deep fried walleye is definitely one of them.
Thanks again for that call. Charlie, are there things that kind of bug you in the pop culture world when you see the Midwest pop up or be referenced on the big or small screen?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that idea that it's, you know, it's just kind of a bland group of boring people is sort of the thing that people double down on. And yeah, there are a lot of bland, boring people here for sure. But there are a lot of interesting people too. And also the bland and boring people, they're only bland and boring because you didn't take enough time to, you know, look at them and ask them, you know, if they got a deer over the weekend, you know, maybe ask them the wrong questions, you know? So I do think that we got to kind of combat some of those notions a little bit, and you know, truly it's a remarkable place here with the best people in the world, and I'm not biased at all in that. I'm a journalist at the end of the day, so I have no bias.
Now, what do you want people who aren't from here, maybe somebody is listening, they're driving through, or I don't know, they're at the airport or whatever, they're hearing about the Midwest for the first time, what do you want them to know about the Midwest?
I want to know that congratulations, you've landed in the greatest place on earth, first off. Second off, if you do want an old-fashioned, come on over. I'll make it, and I won't muddle the rhyme. We'll send you home with all the leftovers. Yes, you may have put, you know, the casserole plate face down in the garbage because it wasn't a very good casserole, but you're going to go home with the – that's calories. That's good for you. Y'all, driving here is also different, you know. Four-way stop here means something. Usually when you get up to a four-way stop, you stop, and if you're there first, you go first. Here, we stop, and then we wait for another car to come by so we can get pleasure in waving them past. And it is very pleasurable.
I had a standoff getting on the bus today where nobody would go first. That's Midwest, right?
Oh, geez, hang on. I think I lost you there. Bad connection. What'd you say?
I said I had a standoff getting on the bus today where everybody didn't want to go first. That says it all, right, Charlie?
Yeah, you were stuck in a classic Opoff. after you. No, I insist after you, you know, and that's dangerous. You got to know how to act in those situations. Otherwise, you know, you'll be sitting there inviting someone to go on the bus, and eventually the bus driver, he's going to have no choice but to just go, and now you're all taking an Uber together.
Well, Charlie, I'm looking at the time there. I think it is actually time to say a short goodbye. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Are you sure I can't get you a beer? Do you want to go out to my garage and look at my I got a new snowblower, okay? So think about it. No pressure.
Maybe I'll swing by after the show, Charlie.
Yeah, do that. Okay, keep her moving. Watch out for deer.
You too.
And as always, go Packers. And I won't finish that sentence so you don't get fined by the FCC.
I appreciate that. Okay? That's Charlie Behrens, comedian, host of the Manitowoc Minute, with us to talk about his new book. It's called The Midwest Survival Guide, How We Talk, Love, Work, Drink, and Eat Everything with Ranch. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. In a TV special for Thanksgiving, Sesame Street introduced a new character, a 7-year-old Korean-American Muppet named Ji Young. She's the first ever Asian-American Muppet character on the show. She was introduced in part as a response by Sesame Street to the recent rise in hate crimes against Asian-Americans. John C. Yang is president and executive director of the advocacy group Asian-Americans Advancing Justice. John, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And Heather Kerkorian is associate professor and chair in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies at UW-Madison School of Human Ecology. Heather, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me. Nice to be here.
Well, first, I want to give a listen to an excerpt from near the beginning of that special, built around a special event on Sesame Street, celebrating all the neighbors. We're going to hear Ji Young speak first here.
When I was coming back here, a kid yelled out at me to go back home. It really, really, really hurt my feelings.
Of course it did.
It made me feel sad. and scared.
Emma doesn't understand. Wasn't Ji-young just at her house?
Well, what they meant was that she should leave Sesame Street and this country.
Huh?
Ji-young is Korean. Her family's from a place called Korea.
And there are some people who don't believe that Asian people like me and Anna and Ji-young belong in this country.
Oh, no.
That was wrong and unfair. I'm Chinese and Irish, and if someone told me to go back home, I would be so sad.
And home is where you live with the people who love you, with your family and your friends.
Yes, Sesame Street is Ji-young's home.
John, I want to start with you. What is your response? What are your thoughts on this character, Ji-young, and the addition by Sesame Street?
When I saw this episode, it really resonated with me. And even as I heard this again, it made me a little bit emotional because the experience that Ji-young had is one that many, many, if not all Asian Americans have had in the United States. This being asked to go home, go back to where you came from, or this notion of being asked the question, where are you really from? So to have an episode like this that sees Asian Americans and recognizes us as Americans really means us being seen and us being part of a neighborhood and part of a community.
And John, Ji-young is also a talented guitarist, we find out in that introductory show. What do you think of just the general scope of the character as we meet her?
I really appreciated that because we weren't just dealing with stereotypes. Yes, we talked about Korean American culture, and that's how is fundamentally part of her identity. But she is more than that, right? She is also a guitar player. She's also a skateboarder. She's just a fun-loving seven-year-old. And that's also part of the Asian American experience, is that, you know, our identity is part in part our culture, but it's also part of all of these different things. And to be seen in that way and all of that complexity, all of that nuance is just wonderful for all of the kids that are watching this.
Heather, when it comes to the messages that kids see and hear and receive, what do you think about Sesame Street's introduction of this character, Ji-young?
Yeah, so this particular character seems really in line with Sesame Workshop's model for their characters. So Sesame Workshop has a history of doing a lot of formative research before introducing a new lesson plan or a new character, to talk with individuals from that group and do a lot of boots on the ground research before they develop the character. And I think this really reflected that, both in terms of the lived experiences and the different examples, not just from Ji-young, but also the other characters talking about their cultural history and practices. So I think it was really representative of their model.
And Heather, this goes back to the beginning, right? I mean, part of Sesame Street's mission was to have a diverse group of people living and working together. This is controversial in some states, almost banned in Mississippi initially. I think a Black Muppet introduced a year or so later. This is kind of part of the long-term, I guess, mission?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So for over half a century now, Sesame Workshop, the creators of Sesame Street, have been taking on complex social issues. This has been a goal from the outset. So they covered divorce and death and incarceration and foster care, lots of complex issues that a lot of people might shy away from talking about with young children. And that's just been part of their model from the beginning.
And John, Ji-young's puppeteer, Kathleen Kim, has Korean parents, I understand, herself. What are your thoughts on that decision, intentional decision, I would think, by Sesame Street?
It's a wonderful decision. So we've had the fortune to work with Kathleen Kim. So she comes from the community, and so she understands the complexity of the community and that we're not just one-dimensional. And you could see that in the character, how she intersperses Korean language as well as English, how she uses certain idioms. Again, that's part of, as Heather says, our lived experiences. And to see that performed by someone that comes from our community makes it especially special.
Heather, I think some parents might think, wow, this is a big social issue. Is my kid, whatever age the kid is my kid too young to hear this and understand it and get it? What are your thoughts on what this means for kids of younger ages?
Yeah, absolutely. I think actually it's really important to have conversations early and often. And I think especially among U.S. white parents, these conversations tend not to happen at all or happen far too late. Really young kids start to pick up on implicit messages, both from their families and the larger community, pretty early on. Between 2 and 4 years of age, they start to show implicit racial bias. And that's from the implicit messages they're picking up, not necessarily explicit messages they hear in conversations. So kids are picking up on these, whether or not we're talking to them about it.
We're talking about a new character in the neighborhood on Sesame Street, Ji Young, a Korean-American 7-year-old, a Muppet. We've got Heather Kerkorian with us from the UW-Madison School of Human Ecology and John C. Yang, President and Executive Director of Asian Americans Advancing Justice. John, you mentioned earlier, and this is part of the reason this character was created and brought onto the show, rise in hate crimes, hate messages targeting Asian Americans over the last couple of years. Do you see other positive responses coming out of this from, say, other media or educational organizations?
We do. The good thing, perhaps, is out of this tragedy does come some progress, whether it is corporations that are taking notice and doing more with their employees, whether it is media or even sports and entertainment sort of taking a position. Certainly, we have seen that from the NBA, you know, the National Basketball Association, among others, and starting to talk about this in a different way. On one hand, I never like to have it be driven by tragedy, but at the same time, certainly if it brings opportunities for further understanding and get us to a better place with respect to racial justice and racial equity, then certainly it is perhaps worth it at least a little bit.
And Heather, say a family starts by seeing that segment we played a clip from Sesame Street. When we're talking about educating on this issue or any others, what do you recommend as next steps for parents to take that that thing they see in the media and amplify it and build on it?
It's a great question, especially for this young age, for the preschool audience. It's important to have those kinds of conversations. So little kids can definitely learn from educational television, but especially for this kind of social or emotional lesson, and especially when it comes to race and ethnicity, they really need those extra conversations and activities with parents or teachers in order to make the most from that lesson. So one thing that parents can do is just use the show as a launch pad. A lot of parents just don't know how to have conversations with their kids about race and ethnicity and culture. And so the show can provide topics and language that they can use to talk to their kids about it. And some simple things could just be asking kids what they thought about the show, asking young kids how the characters felt, how they might feel if they were in that same situation.
And John, do you have suggestions for Asian American parents if their kid comes home and has heard what we heard Ji Young go through there, that, go home or whatever the hurtful message is? How do you suggest Asian American parents talk to their kids about that?
Well, that's why I find this episode very refreshing as well, because the message that the Sesame Street episode has is something that an Asian American parent can grab hold of as well. And to say, no, you are home. This is your neighborhood. You do belong here. Those are messages that resonate. And to go back to what Heather was saying, it's definitely never too young. Certainly for me, even as a 5-year-old, these were some of the things that I heard. So to have an episode where I can feel like someone sees me, and to have children, you know, our kids, to see that is definitely a step in the right direction. It opens up these conversations in a way that we haven't been able to have before.
Heather, can you talk about that idea of representation, even in parts of a show like Sesame Street, where they're not maybe explicitly looking at anti-Asian American rhetoric? Just the fact of seeing people getting along together from different ethnic backgrounds. Do kids learn something from that?
Yeah, and I think the way that it's depicted is especially important. So just having a broad cast of characters isn't enough. What's really needed at this age especially is having the people who are seen as authority figures condoning those interactions. So the fact that Sesame Street has adult characters who are seen as authority figures on Sesame Street, not just interacting, but also helping to solve social problems and condoning the relationships between characters from different communities is really important.
John, Sesame Street, just one piece of a very big puzzle there. Are there other changes, other things you'd like to see in American culture when it comes to this trend, unfortunate trend of people targeting Asian Americans?
Yeah, there's so much more that can be done. At root of a lot of this for the Asian American community is this feeling of being what we would call a perpetual foreigner. This notion that regardless of how long we've been here, we must be born in another country or owe our loyalties elsewhere. And a lot of this does stem from the need for education, to need to tell stories at that grade school level, to understand that Asian Americans have been part of this society for a long time, and we have contributed to the fabric of this country. The other thing that's really appreciated about this episode is how diverse of a cast of Asian Americans that this show had. It wasn't just East Asian Americans or Chinese Americans or Korean Americans, but also Indian Americans and Vietnamese Americans. And that's important because too often we fall into the trap of seeing the Asian American community as one monolith, one sort of singular entity, whereas actually it's really a rich diversity of different communities.
It's a good place to leave it. John, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And Heather, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Have a good one.
John C. Yang is president and executive director of Asian Americans Advancing Justice, and Heather Kerkorian is associate professor and chair in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies at UW-Madison School of Human Ecology. We talked to them today about Sesame Street adding its first Asian American Muppet to the show.